Crowhill here from Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Today we review an IPA and talk about Spanish. Hello and welcome to Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Good evening, Pigweed.
Good evening, Crowhill.
So, what's on your mind today?
We have a visitor.
A visitor, yeah?
Yeah. Friend of, this is Pigweed, and when they speak to each other, Spanish has two verb tenses for second person.
Okay.
When you're speaking to somebody, you can use the formal.
English used to.
Or the informal.
But it wasn't like that.
So it's formal or the informal, and they use the formal between them, which is something I'm not used to hearing because, you know, it's me and my wife here.
We right.
Talk to each other as if she's my great aunt. And so I asked her about it. It just got me thinking about how much I like that aspect of Spanish.
Right.
And the other things that I like about the Spanish language.
Okay.
So I want to talk about that after I get some, what?
Yeah, so
my
this
belly.
This is an organic beer, which means that there's no glass or metal or...
Yes, and no animals were harmed in the production.
Yeah,
of this.
So I hate this use of organic, but anyway, so this is a spring IPA, a session IPA. That's actually what caught my eye, the session IPA, because it's only 4.7%.
Okay, well, sometimes you just need that.
Yeah.
But you still want the flavor.
I want the flavor, but I don't want quite as much alcohol. So that's what we get here. Yeah.
All right.
So this is...
Oh, it's got a good nose on it.
Ooh, it does. It does. Nice aroma. It's a little bit cloudy.
So you're saying
pale.
This was not... IPAs in general, you... categorically, you want to drink them as fresh as you can.
Yeah.
So this wasn't brewed in the spring, I hope you're telling me.
I don't know.
A six-month-old IPA, not cool.
Yeah. Well, especially if it's a low alcohol, it's not going to age as well.
No.
But I'm getting good aroma off of this, and it's a nice head.
Oh,
very, 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 very pale color.
And that tastes very fresh. Very nice.
Mmm. Wow, yeah. That's
wow,
a nice
you know
flavor.
What?
That's a nice flavor.
Was it expensive?
No, oh, I think we want this for the boating trip.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, this and fishing.
Fishing, crabbing beer.
Yes. Yep, I think that's on the agenda there. Very, very pale. Very nice flavor.
Yes,
I like
that's
it.
Interesting that style has come on. I would say it's only, maybe a year? This low alcohol.
Yeah, the session IPA.
The session IPA.
It's been a little more than a year, because I remember getting them a couple years ago down in Florida. But yeah, they're...
But everybody's doing one.
I know. It's very nice.
And which is great, right? Because now they're competing against each other, and
yeah.
Everybody's got to make the best low. If only one guy's making it, doesn't have to be particularly good.
Right. But it's popular. I mean,
yeah, I like it.
I like the flavor. And
who are these people?
Who are they?
Peak is from... Do we even know where these jokers are? Or
no,
the,
we don't know where they're
locals
from.
Or anything. All right. Well, spring IPA. I mean,
there we go. Portland, Maine.
Oh.
Portland, Maine. Okay. All right. Well done.
Not the crappy Portland. The good one.
Not the one that's on fire right now.
Yeah.
Well done, Peak. We like your beer, and we're going to drink it on our camping trip. And if you want to sponsor the Pigweed and Crowhill camping trip, by all means, send us a case,
yes.
and we'll drink it on our trip. All right. So, yes. Spanish.
So this the idea of the usted versus tú. So you're talking directly to somebody, it's second person,
mm-hmm.
and you will use a different verb tense to indicate respect for usually respect for elders,
yeah,
respect for authority,
right?
Or
so, like, the cop pulls you over, you're not going to say two, you're going to say
yeah, yeah, you're going to say usted. And in this case, so our visitor it was a friend of ours that used to live locally, moved away. Now he wants to come back and reestablish himself here. So he's staying with us while he, gets a job, saves some money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fine. Yeah, yeah. Great fella.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a way to maintain a little distance.
Okay.
Right? So
right.
A woman and a man, a married woman and a married
right.
man
right.
living in the same house.
Right.
The usted is kind of a little bit of a wall.
Yeah, right.
I mean, so there's many good uses. Just the fact that it's built into the language, respect, which, we could
it's
use a little bit
like,
more of
it's
that.
It's kind of like, you know, that every St. Patrick's Day, we watch Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Yes,
yeah. And there's a scene in there where Michael McBride, a Dublin guy, who's being brought in to replace Darby O'Gill as the caretaker of the manor, is introduced to Darby's lovely daughter Katie, and they're talking, and Katie and Michael are talking, and Michael says, "You know, my name is Michael," and he says, "Well, so it is. But until I've known you at least a day, your name is Mr. McBride."
Exactly.
Yes.
So our version of that would be to throw in a lot of sirs and ma'ams and that kind of thing. So, you know, I mean, we can do it, but it's not really built into the language to the same degree that it is. And so there's also a country city thing. So you're definitely going to, and he's very country. You're going to find just like here, right? So like you get a little bit more of that yes ma'am, no ma'am, take your hat off.
Yeah, that's the southern kind of thing. Right? Yeah.
So that's part of it. And in that sense, so Miss Pigweed is from the city, and she speaks to her aunts and uncles throughout her entire life in the Usted, and has noticed that her nieces and nephews do not.
Hmm.
Not categorically, but it used to be all across the board. That's how you do it.
In other words, we're losing that level of respect. That used
yes,
to be. Yeah.
Yes. And so I had a few questions. I'm like, all right, so say, so you've got, like I said, an elder authority, and also it's a power structure thing.
Yeah.
Something simple like the waiter and the patron.
Yeah.
Right? So you're serving
that
person. So what if the waiter's 40 and the patrons are 20? You know, there's no rules here, right?
Right, yeah.
And she's like, well, it would kind of depend on if the 20-year-olds started with Usted, then the waiter would follow.
Right.
If they're disrespectful brats,
then you'd follow with that.
Then he might follow with that.
So this reminds me a little bit, one time back at my mom's house. Lots of nephews and nieces were around, and one of them, we were joking around about something, and one of them called me a dummy, and I said, "That's Uncle Dummy to you."
I don't want, you don't want too much familiarity, right?
Right.
We're all family, and we're having a good.
Yeah.
But let's recognize here, I'm your uncle, and I'm your elder, and you know, let's.
Yes, there should be a certain amount of decorum. Yes.
It does exist, but, so I asked her about, what about, and you and I can relate to this too, like, senora and senorita. It's like, at what point are you offended, right? Because say you're 35, and he's 20, right? Are you insulted by being called senora, or you feel like you're being insulted by calling senorita? I'm not sure. We're not bros here, right? And the same thing is when something like that, when you got to the age where young men called you Mister rather than dude bro, and like there was a little area in your life where you're like, don't call me Mister. I mean,
and then there's your neighbor who you call Mister forever, right? The neighbor you grew up next to, you call them Mister no matter what. Yeah,
right. In one sense. When he calls you Mister, you're like, you're 32. He's 20. Like, am I getting that old? I feel like we're still bros.
So I've run into this a bit with daughters-in-law, right? So my son marries this lovely young woman, and the question is, what's she going to call me? Is she going to call me by my first name? Is she going to call me... What's she going to call me?
Mister? Dad?
Exactly. Right?
Sometimes
you
transition into the dad,
See, I don't go
but
with
it's
that.
It's very early.
She has a dad, you know. I'm not taking his place. Right? I don't want her calling me dad. But there is that kind and it would be nice... See, I think it would be nice if culture provided the expectations for those kind of situations, where it wasn't a matter of every family deciding whether you'd call me this or that, because that makes all this confusion and ambiguity and it makes it awkward.
Yeah, I
would much rather that there was a structure, and this is what's expected. You mm-hmm. call me this, you know, and I'd be fine with that.
I would, yeah, I would too. So with the senor and senorita, my wife's aunt, even in her 60s, mm-hmm. would be naturally addressed by a stranger as senora, and she would check them. She says, I'm still senorita, meaning I was never married.
Okay, right.
And so, yeah, so that's another thing. So so a woman that's 30 and married with yeah. her husband, and you expect the waiter to call you senora because you're there
well,
with your husband.
Well, that's the whole interesting Mrs. Too, right? Ms. thing.
That's where we screwed it up.
Right. I mean, in America, that was the whole Miss versus Mrs. thing. And they wanted to have, well, no, a uh-huh. woman shouldn't be defined by whether she's married.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gosh, that's Ms. forever. That was yeah. when we were kids,
I know,
think, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's still, does anybody use, yeah, there is no Miss, right? Like.
Well, you know, it's a Southern thing for kids to call grown-ups Miss and then their first name,
uh-huh.
irrespective of whether they're married or not.
Yeah.
So a kid, yeah, but you have a
Well, you know what, named, it's actually old school Baltimore thing, also.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, so it's a Southern thing. Yeah. So Baltimore is a Southern city, right? below the Mason-Dixon line, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So, so you have a woman named Sandy, and she's married. She's not married. Doesn't make any difference. The kids are going to call her Miss Sandy.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah,
I love that. Yeah, that's the equivalent of that. So another thing about Spanish verb tenses,
mm-hmm.
Not because I think it's a great aspect, but it's an insightful, it's a window into
the Spanish mind.
The Spanish mind
yeah.
is that they are uncomfortable with certainty,
hmm.
and that is expressed through verb tense also, in that they do not use the future tense,
yeah.
and they barely use the progressive tense.
Mm-hmm.
So if I say, pues llego a tu casa a las cinco. I use the present tense, which is I arrive at your house at 5. Because if you were to say, they have a future tense, of course. If I say I will arrive at 5, I don't know. That's just a little bit too exact.
Too much pressure.
Yes. Exactly. And this is, you know, this is not me, my insight into it. This is expressed to me by Spanish speaking teachers in Mexico.
Okay.
That she says, you know, we're just not that it's like, I have every intention of being there at 5, but the only reason I would say I will be there at 5 is if you're putting some pressure on me.
Mm-hmm.
We have to leave at 5. I'm like, dude, I will be there. But you would never just casually say, okay, I'll be at your house at 5.
But we do the same thing in English. We say something like, I'll be there at 5 sharp.
Yeah, right. That would be like the boom, like the punctuation.
Yes, yeah.
Right, but there's it even like I'm going to be there. Even that is
yeah.
a little bit too certain for the
So it's
kind of
like
Spanish
the island.
Mind.
It's kind of like the island, no problem, man. Kind of.
Well,
thing.
Yeah, and it's well, and the Mexican mañana, right? Yeah. It's like almost anything that you do today can probably be done tomorrow, just as well. Yeah, and. Yeah, and well, this leads to another thing of mine. It's my unified theory of weather.
Okay.
And I don't want to get into it now, but it's just we have to get things done at certain times of the year because the weather is changing.
Right.
When you live in a climate, it's always easier to do the mañana thing
right.
because it's like, well, tomorrow's going to be exactly like
well,
today.
Well, there are theories that technology and things only develop in colder climates.
Yes. Let's write that down. This is going to be a tough
okay.
episode.
All right.
There's another tense that we don't have. It's called the subjunctive tense.
Right.
And it expresses, again, uncertainty or doubt or the desire, like you want something to happen, but you're not really sure it's going to happen. It's like, if I ask you for the second, if you go to the store
yeah.
is one thing. I want you to go to the store. Mm-hmm. The verb tense changes because I don't know if you're actually going to go. So, yeah.
Okay.
So the closest thing that we have, the only remnants of that we have, as far as I can tell, is the were. So, something that expresses some vagueness, like, If I were a millionaire,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, unfortunately, we screw it up most of the time and just say, if I was,
mm-hmm.
right? Or if I were to have $1 million, what do we say? If I had. So you're actually using the past tense
right.
to indicate some uncertain event in the future.
Okay, right.
But that's about it for the our use of the subjunctive. If you say, cuando tengo dinero, when I have money, I'd like to go eat at this restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, when I have money, I'm going to go on vacation, that's a different verb tense because it implies this. I mean, I don't have it now. I don't even know when I'm going to get it. But when the time comes,
okay.
and again, we would say, well, whenever, right? Mm-hmm. We say, whenever I get $5,000 together, I'm going on this cruise.
Yeah.
So we would throw that was how we would do it. But they've got way more built into the language, this sense of uncertainty.
So what this brings up to my mind is a lot of people look at these things that are in or not in the language, and they conclude that that's either in or not in the consciousness of the people who speak that language.
Yeah.
As if the language limits the way they think about things.
Hold on. Are you familiar with this, with the term linguistic relativity?
No.
So in, you actually are.
Okay.
It's exactly what you're talking about.
Sociology class. They just, all the things that I already knew, they're putting a name to.
Yes. It's the theory that the structure of a language influences the way its speakers conceptualize the world.
Right. And I think there's something to that.
Because there's a little chicken and egg going
on
here.
Exactly. I see, my opinion, and not being an expert on, I studied, New Testament Greek, Old Testament Hebrew,
okay.
and a little bit of French, but I'm not by any means an expert on language. I'm not a linguistics guy at all. My daughter is. And it seems to me that this can be a little overblown, that if you try to say the language doesn't have such and such a tense, yeah, but we get around it by doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, right. So we still have that concept in our mind.
Like Eskimos have 23 words for snow.
Yeah, well, yeah, so do we.
We just call it wet snow.
We just call it fresh snow, wet snow, new snow, you know, okay, fine.
Exactly.
You know, it's right. So it's not.
So in this kind of chicken and egg thing,
yeah.
does the culture, does the language influence the culture? Does it, well, really, the culture produced the language.
Yes.
But the language reinforces the culture, mm-hmm. I think, is mm-hmm. a way to look at it.
Yes, I think that's probably right. And obviously, there is an impact of different word choices. Getting back to the whole Miss, Mrs., Ms. Mm-hmm. thing, you know.
Yeah.
So some people think that requiring a woman to either be Miss or Mrs. has some sort of,
restricting
thing, and they don't like that. So, okay, so yes, there is some impact, but I don't like the idea that, you know, saying this language doesn't have such and so tense means those people don't understand
tense. No, hold on. What is the word? What is the phrase? Which is probably entirely wrong. In Russian, there's no word for compromise or something like that.
You're
like,
yeah.
like if there's not a word for it, but there could. What is the German term? So the German term that says taking pleasure in the suffering of others. I'm like, well, that tells me a little bit about it. That explains a few things that you have a word for that. Right? So there's a little bit of that going
yes,
on.
There is a little bit of that going on. The fact that you
really?
Have a word
you
for
have,
it.
Or no, there's, you know.
So how about this one? In French, they have a word for, you know, when you're talking to somebody and you only afterwards think of what you should have said.
Oh my God, that's a story of my life.
Yeah. So,
oh my God, you know, I had the most brilliant thing that I could have said yesterday.
The French have a word for it. They call it staircase wit.
Oh, what, as you're strolling?
Yeah, as you're walking down the staircase, then you realize.
Like, oh my God, I would have been sound asleep.
Yes, but that doesn't mean that English speaking people don't understand the concept.
Yeah.
We just haven't developed a word for it.
Yeah, yeah. But on the other end, you'd be like, well, this is something that they're a little bit more conscious of
yes.
because they've developed their
yeah.
own word for it.
Yes.
So, you know, how about that? You know that word where a bunch of men gather around an unaccompanied woman and start groping her? Oh, no, that's only in Arabic. I'm not sure if that reveals anything about the culture, but it might. I'm not saying anything.
I was running through the thesaurus there. I couldn't come up with that word. That was a hard one.
All right, so now talk about the reflexive verb tense.
Ooh, okay.
So reflexive verbs absolve responsibility.
Ooh.
So, like, again, if you're thinking about the psyche, so we've already got the uncomfortableness with certainty.
Yeah.
We've got a little bit more respect built into the language. A verb tense that vagueness, hoping that something happens. Could not. Reflexive verbs are verbs that happen to the person. So it's a more of an inactive verb. And let me give you an example. If somebody comes in and they smell something weird, and I go, dang it, I burnt the cookies.
Okay.
Quemé las galletas. They'd be like, well, why'd you do that? Because you would only say that if you intentionally did it.
Ah.
So what you would actually say is, se me quemaron las galletas, meaning the cookies burned themselves. It's kind of under my watch.
Right.
It's like, I'm the guy that's here, but it's different. So
it's like saying the cookies got burned.
Yeah, cookies got burned.
Yeah.
So, and then, but there's a may in there, so you do include yourself in there. As me, but they did it on their own, and yeah, I was kind of in charge. So, hey, what happened here? And a kid would say, well, while I was trying to drink the milk, it got spilled. They would never...
Kids are expert at that,
you
anyway.
You would never say, no. I spilled... If you said, I spilled the milk, that meant you grabbed the cup and turned it upside down.
So, my younger brother went through this phase. I certainly hope he's over it. went through this phase where... something would happen, and he would disclaim all responsibility, okay? So we'd be in the kitchen, and he'd be eating breakfast, and there'd be a box of cereal, and all of a sudden the box of cereal would fall over.
Well.
You know, what did you do? Well, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So or even something like, what's another reflection? Like, to forget.
Okay.
Yeah. If you say, I forgot that. That means, and you could use that, you're like, that was something I wanted out of my mind, so I intentionally forgot it.
Yeah, it's like, otherwise, like the Harry Potter, where they pull the thing out of their brain, you remember that? Yeah, they had this way, they could take a wand, and they could, like, pull a memory out of their brain and stick it in this bucket.
Yes. It's
pretty exactly. Spooky.
And so what you would say is, that event has been forgotten to me. Kind of, you know. So,
I see.
So,
like an intentional forgetting.
You could say that.
Okay.
But, and that's how English speakers, early on while you're learning, end up, because that reflexive tense is not familiar to us, so we end up saying the wrong thing, like, I burned the cookies, I lost the keys.
Yeah.
Right? Did you really? I mean, so what you're saying is, you took the keys and stuck them somewhere where you couldn't find them. You're like, no. The keys were lost. To me.
Okay.
So.
Right.
Yep. Right. But so psychologically, again, if you give the linguistic relativity some credit, you're going, yeah, that would say something about the psychology of the people.
This reminds me a little bit of the theological concept of God forgetting sins.
Yeah.
Because, you know, on the one hand, if you say God forgot the sins, what are you no longer omniscient?
Yeah.
You know?
What? God's forgetful?
Right.
He's so old.
It's like, I'm intentionally not remembering.
Yes.
Yes. I'm putting it out of my mind.
Yes.
That sort of concept.
And that's how the reflexive tense works. You use it when, but you also use it in other weird ways. Like, you don't wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
You say, I wash myself the hands. I don't know. There's a lot of this reflexive, which is not familiar, but I think it's in some ways telling. Oh, the other thing. Well, you know the origin of this one. They use ojalá. So, all right, I'll meet you. Well, all right, I'll see you at the beach on Thursday. The other person would say ojalá. What does that sound like?
So it sounds like inshallah.
It does.
Yes.
And why would that be?
Because the Muslims conquered Spain.
Yes. And you would think, and actually I'm surprised that 700 years, that there wouldn't be more leftover Muslim / Arabic leftovers in from Spain. Yeah. But really, there really isn't.
Well, probably Ferdinand and Isabella killed everybody who used any of those words.
Right. So the reconquest was thorough. It wasn't just like, we're going to be in charge now.
Right.
But, of course, we're going to let people be Muslims and
you
speak
better
Arabic.
Better doggone
and
quit saying those words.
Yes. You are out of here. I mean, 700 years?
Yeah. I guess it was El Cid.
El Cid. So they, that northwestern corner was still Spanish.
Yeah.
And they took back the entire nation, but they didn't just reestablish control. They must have kicked everybody out,
I guess. Killed them.
It was
a brutal time. But this does seem like a remnant. There are probably others. I bet you it's some Spanish scholar who comes.
And so, in terms of linguistic relativity, a culture that does a lot of inshallah and a lot of ojalá is to me psychologically. You don't have a lot of control over your own destiny.
Yeah.
That there is a lot of, well, you know, so, are you...
Que sera, sera.
Yeah, que sera, yeah, like, all right, this project needs to be done by Friday. Well, God willing. No, God willing!
No, you better doggone
out. We haven't worked in it. You never know, God. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seems to me that that produces an unproductive culture.
Could be.
Where you don't have, where, you know, you don't have people who are in charge of their own lives. Gosh, how much time? Oh, yeah, we got a little bit of time. What I have found, and I'm not, I'd have to double down with Mrs. Pigweed on this one, but when I am listening to people talk, trying to eavesdrop, sometimes I can't quite understand their Spanish because of the speech pattern and pronunciation, and that gives me an indication of class level and education level.
Okay, it's kind of like me trying to listen to a Scottish person, maybe?
Yeah. They're like, I know that's my language.
But what the heck are you saying?
What the heck? So I'm like, I know that's Spanish, but that's a little rough. However, but this indication of class and education level is not reflected in really bad grammar in the way that you have in English.
Ah.
So there, as far as I can tell, there's no Spanish equivalent of "he ain't got no money."
Right.
It's like no. I mean, that would just be jumbled words in the wrong order.
They use the proper grammar, but what are they doing instead?
Yes. Yeah, so it's in speech pattern and not speech pattern. Very fast and kind of sloppy pronunciation.
Mm.
So it's not, you know. You know the difference between somebody articulating in as a news program and somebody.
Yes, you know that's interesting. William F. Buckley, the famous conservative, actually grew up in Mexico, and he learned.
Shut up!
No, he did. He grew up in Mexico and he learned Spanish. That was his first language, and
because he has the most upper class Boston northeastern accent.
Yeah. So this maybe I'm wrong, but the way I understand it, he grew up speaking Spanish. And they were very careful to impress upon him the importance of diction and speaking properly, which is why you see him in English, you know, being very, very careful with his English.
That's where I was looking for, diction. Yeah, so sloppy diction is more of an indication than
grammar.
Than bad grammar.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So back to things I enjoy. There's no second person plural. So in Spanish, you know, if you're talking to one person, it's one thing. You.
Yeah.
And then all we have is you all, y'all.
Well, we used to have
different guys.
Words. We used to have, like, if you read the King James, there is a.
If you address a crowd, it's different.
So it's thou and thee and that sort of thing. So you have different, or
thee is one person and thou is use guys.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So you did back in older English, you did have a distinction between those things, but they all fell away.
Yeah,
we don't do that anymore.
So all right, I would like to thank you all for coming to this event. And then, once you've said it one time, now you just say you, right? And they're like, well, You know that you can get your parking validation. So you know what I mean? There is no...
Y'all and all y'all. And that
and that's the best you can do is mm-hmm. kind of make up some stuff for you know, all y'all. Now, in Spanish, in, so second person, there's a formal and informal. Third person, what am I talking about here? What is plural, second person plural.
Okay, right, yeah.
There's only the formal
ah.
in everywhere except Spain.
Ah.
So Spain does have, when you, if you're talking, right, if you're talking to a group of business leaders, you, it's one thing. If you're talking to your group of friends, it's different. In Mexico, it's all the formal. Whether or not it's just your buddies or whatever, so
okay.
they which is fine too. But I like just but the other the first the singular just talking to one person, talking to your boss, and actually it could work the reverse. So let's just say you're in a situation where you know you should use the formal, and you don't. That's a kind of you know that's intentionally disrespectful. Like if you talk to a cop, you're like, hey, bro.
Yeah.
It'd be the equivalent of yes. going...
Right, yeah, yeah. You don't talk that way to a cop.
And when you go to your boss, you're like, dude. All right, you know. And if you did, you'd be saying something also
yes.
by doing that. But what about...
Yeah, mate. So a previous boss of mine was from Australia.
Ah.
And he asked me one time, he said, you know, what do you say in America? Like, in Australia, you just say mate. You know, if you don't know... You say, "Hey, mate." You know,
mate.
What do you do in America? And I said, "I don't know." You say, "Hey, you," or you say, "Dude," or you say,
"Yeah." But I think "dude" is more informal than
yes.
"mate." Mate, you
yes.
could you actually use with your boss?
Yes, you could.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems. Yeah, I agree that that is a very useful sort of just a very friendly way,
but also generic.
It does not define, right? It's not your coolness level mm-hmm. or your respectful level.
Right.
You know, you can really use the
yeah,
mate
it's,
with
it's
everyone.
Like, it's like, hey, you, but less offensive than hey, you would
yeah.
be in English.
Right, hey, you is, I've run out of things
and,
to
and of course, and of course, you remember the who was the late night comic? Benny Hill. he would go up to somebody, hey, you, and say, how you know my name?
Oh, my God. It was so dumb. You don't realize how smart it really was.
Yes, yes, exactly.
You know what I mean? His understanding of language
mm-hmm.
was amazing. So, yeah, he would do, like, the Asian guy.
Yeah.
He was a karate instructor, right? He came out in the full gi, right?
Yeah,
he goes, a good evening, everybody. And they said, well, it's good evening. He goes, no. I'm good at heaving a heavy body. And the whole thing would be this double play.
Wow.
I mean, you, right? So as silly as it is, it's a real understanding. I mean, to write
yeah.
something like that
yes.
involves a lot yeah. of understanding of language.
Wow. I didn't know he was so smart.
Oh, he was so smart. You cannot misspell. You can almost not misspell anything in Spanish. The rules
well,
are
tell that
so...
to Mrs. Crowhill, who's trying to learn Spanish right now, and she's like every once in a while,
It is so locked down,
yeah.
rule-oriented. Hmm. So, like, we're like, you know, the I before E, except, well, like, we have rules that work like 60, 70% of the time.
Yeah.
Their rules always work. If you came upon a town, and it was 25 letters long, you would all know how to pronounce it, and where to put the accent
really?
On it. Because the accent falls at the same place unless there's an actual written accent. The written accent means we are changing
the normal
the
rule.
The
yeah.
rule.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there's a few things like sometimes C, if a C is followed by an I, it's a S. If it's followed by a U, then it's K. So there's sometimes where this, you know, an S and a C will sound the same, so if you didn't really know and you were writing it out, you could make that mistake. V and B are pronounced the same. So if you weren't a good speller and you were just phonetically doing it, you could confuse the V and the B.
Right.
But that's only if you were writing it. If you're looking at it, you cannot make a mistake.
Sure.
If you get the rules, which people organically, you know, native speakers already get and don't realize they get it. But if you're studying it, you can.
So I know that English, the rules are complicated in English because it's influenced by Latin, French, and German.
Right.
So, and probably also from native Anglo-Saxon, you know, I mean, well, whatever the natives spoke, not the Anglo-Saxons. But so you have all these different influences and all these different rules all colliding together. And you have this this confusion.
And French has got all this, you know, what, E, U, A, X?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
what is all those letters at the end? That's kind of more like English, really.
So you have all these weird things in English that are, this part of it's borrowed from Latin, and this part of it's borrowed from French, and this part of it's borrowed from German. I wonder why, in the development of Spanish, that didn't happen.
Maybe Latin was very organized in that way, and it wasn't, like you're saying, how we're influenced by so many other things. This was just a derivative of Latin, and I wonder if Italian has the same sort of very, you know, logical structure.
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyway, I got some. I wish my Spanish was better, but this is what's funny is I learned, and this is the way I like to learn, with a teacher and a book, and the rules. And so if I would ask somebody in Spanish, I'm like, okay, so how do you say the third person past tense of this irregular verb? They're like, I don't know what you're talking
exactly.
about. Exactly. Can you use it in a sentence? Or like, oh, okay. Right? So they'll hear it and they'll know.
Yeah.
And they don't know their own rules. Well, so why would they?
No, they wouldn't. And it's the same thing as when you listen to people who've taught English as a second language. There are all these rules that, like, English speakers are going, what?
Really? That's a rule?
That's a rule? I didn't know that. But you just naturally know.
Right. And so our house guest and my wife just learned on the street. So they know just what sounds right.
Yeah.
And mine's completely the opposite. So when I'm speaking, I'm translating in my head really fast.
Yeah.
And they're just like, well, what I'm used to hearing is, you know.
Right.
So it's, it's two different ways that, of learning.
So I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I was on the metro the other day, and I saw this sign, and it said Latinx. What the heck was that? I mean, there's Latino. Yeah. What is Latinx, or whatever the heck that is?
Well, the Romance languages are going to have a problem when they run into
wokeness. Yeah,
because every noun has a gender. So this new non-gender world that we're supposed to be living in, there's going to be a problem with the whole language. So this one, instead of Latino and Latinx, I mean Latino and Latina, men and women, that's not inclusive enough.
Ah.
You know, we have to include the other 37 genders.
Yeah.
So we do that with Latinx, and the first place was
is that how you say it, Latinx?
Latinx, okay. Yeah. California University mandated, there's nothing better than a university mandating how you have to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's learning for you, isn't it?
That's how Jordan Peterson became famous.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, alright, so we're not going to use Latino and Lena because it's Latino and Latina because it excludes,
whatever.
Multiple gendered people. Yeah. And then they did a study recently. 3% of Latinos use it.
Mm-hmm.
And 3/4 of them have never heard of it.
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit of a backlash going, this is the
Anglicization. Yeah. So in other words,
our language.
Yes,
we're imposing
woke culture on there.
Yeah.
Now,
but
what happened
a bunch
to
of white woke professors are now going
to
tell Latinos how they're supposed to speak their own language.
What happened to cultural imperialism and all that kind of stuff? This is precisely cultural imperialism.
It is. It's like, that's not how we do it, and we don't even know what you're talking about, basically.
Right. All right, so this has been very interesting. I've studied a little bit of Spanish. I've tried it on one of those online things. I don't know hardly any Spanish at all. But
we need to go to Mexico to see a bullfight.
Yeah.
Because Most of Spain is gone.
Yeah.
Most of Latin America is gone.
Okay.
Really, the last place you can go see a bullfight. We read some Ernest Hemingway.
Okay.
And there's
go see a bullfight and learn how to say two more beers, please, in Spanish. Yes. All right. So now before we get to our man of the week, I've got a little problem with our man of the week. And so when we say man of the week, we mean human of the week. You know, we're using man in the generic sense, right? So we're saying the human of the week.
Right. Okay? And we both recognize how outdated that is, but we are...
We're endorsing it. We're sticking with it, because that's the way we are. But I've noticed that recently our man of the week has been more often a child or a woman.
It really has been more children.
And so I'm making a call to the men out there. Step up, doggone it.
Be worthy.
Yes. I want the male humans out there. Now, I'm absolutely in favor of the female humans and the child humans doing brave enough things to become the man of the week for the Pig Week and
Crime. I'm all in favor of that. To earn this prestigious.
Yes, I'm 100% in favor of that, and that's wonderful. And I'm very, very happy for all
I
of our...
I could be a hamster could become man of the week. Come on, man.
I don't know about that, but I want the men to step up. So, all right, I just wanted to get that out.
Well, you'll be glad to know I got a man for you.
Okay, good.
I have a man in Australia,
mm-hmm.
probably a mate.
Yeah?
Yeah. And he's, so Chantel Doyle was attacked by a great white shark.
Ooh.
And,
there's a lot of sharks in Australia.
Severe lacerations to the right leg. Thankfully, her husband was there, and he jumped in and punched him in the face.
Well, good for him. Well, there you go.
I guess that was enough to get it loose. Now, this was certainly not the shark, but if you look at this picture of a massive shark, half of his mouth is out of the water.
Yeah.
His shark is, I mean, there's really, even a tiger, I mean, there's nothing on land quite as terrifying.
That's pretty terrifying.
I know. That picture.
That is pretty doggone terrifying.
I don't know. I don't know if I would.
All those sharp teeth.
This is Pig, we might be on our own.
So I was told a long time ago that if you punch a shark in the nose...
Is that a thing or not a thing?
I don't know. We'll have to ask this dude, you know,
I guess it worked. I mean, I don't have to find out where he punched it. I mean, I think I would go for an eye gouge.
Ooh. Ooh.
But yeah. I don't know if that would... I don't know if it's got... You know, it's got this multi-layered eyelids
that probably close up. But the place you absolutely do not want to try to punch him is anywhere near those teeth.
Punch him in the gums.
I don't think so. Work, well, okay, finally, we have a male homo sapien.
All right.
As a man of the week.
Well, good job there, mate. And
keep it up.
Stay out of that water. What are you guys doing down there?